What I want to do this morning with regard to the book of Judges is kind of twofold. I shared last week, I kind of set the stage for the book of Judges last week, so we're not going to do that this week. If you missed last week, it might be a good idea to watch that one simply because we're going through the entire book of Judges. Last week was really the intro setup, laying the groundwork to help everything else that follows make sense. So if you weren't here, you didn't hear that message. Hopefully, what I'm going to share today, I think, makes sense. But if you want a fuller picture of what actually is going on in Israel's life right now and the world that they find themselves, last week's message might be helpful for that. The other challenge that pastors have, is you're in the midst of a sermon series and stuff like Sanctity of Human Life Sunday comes up. We always observe this Sunday in some way, shape, or form, and then the challenge is, how do I make this fit with what I'm already doing? And the hope is that you don't force the Bible to say what you want it to say for this purpose, for the focus on whatever it is you're focusing on. And so I personally don't think that's true of what we're doing here in Judges. I think it fits very nicely together because of the focus being not necessarily on the judge themselves, but actually the problem with not having any heroes within Israel's culture at this time. I shared last week that the book of Judges is really an argument for a king. They were looking for someone to be, well, we were using the term hero, somebody to follow God in his ways. This was the definition that we gave to that word: a person who is admired or idealized for courage, outstanding achievements, or noble qualities. Now, I'm going to Christianize this definition just a little bit of what I think living heroically entails. And I'm going to use the word faithfulness. Instead of just outstanding achievements, we're going to substitute that with faithfulness. What it looks like within culture to follow God faithfully no matter what, no matter what's going on around you. That, to me, is the kind of heroism that the book of Judges is looking for. That's what was missing. That all of these people were not following God and his ways in the midst of the culture they found themselves. And what they needed desperately was a hero to bring some restoration and hope to the story of their lives at this point. Because as I shared, it is a pretty dreadful story. So if you know anything about Judges, you'd be like, why would you go through the book of Judges? That's kind of weird and disturbing, if you've ever read it. And so I was trying to make my point last week of why I am going through that book. And the main point being, our stories need a hero within culture, people who are willing to live courageously, I'm going to say to live faithfully, to be people worth following. There's something noble, something good about their character. That's exactly what was missing in the book of Judges. And what we're going to watch unfold is the devastation of their society. And this is exactly why the author of Judges is saying we need that person. His argument for that person ultimately comes with King David, who, while he had his many flaws, is said to be a man after God's own heart. But we've discovered that that king wasn't even good enough to do that. There had to be somebody, and that king was really pointing to the person of Jesus Christ. Ultimately, that's where we're going with what is desperately needed within this culture. And so this morning, we're going to look at Judges chapter 3, verse 7 through the end of that chapter, verse 31. I'm not going to read that whole thing. I'm going to point out a couple of things. And in my pointing out of those things, tie in what our day today is about, and that is focusing on or highlighting fighting for life. Because we are definitely engaged in a battle. The entire book of Judges is one giant battle. And it's kind of different stories of military victories and defeats and all that kind of stuff. And it is a battle. And the reality is you and I face a battle every single day. A battle that says we know what's best for you. We know what's right, true, and good. And the definition that the culture is using is very opposite. It is inconsistent with what we as the church see as this is right, this is good, and this is what truth looks like. And that battle happens every day. That battle's happening in your hearts and minds, in mine, with our children, all the time. And the pro-life movement is that battle of saying this is what we need to champion. This is what we, and it's worth fighting for. And so I want to take that and add it into the book of Judges, and we're going to do that in just a minute, but I want to give us a brief synopsis of these first three judges. Now, if you remember last week, I said we start in the southern part of Israel. That's at the bottom of that map, and we move our way north. That's how the book is written. If you were reading it, the whole from front to back, you'd start in southern Israel, and geographically, you would go north. I said last week also that we go from bad to worse, morally. That's what the author is portraying here. But as I read the first judge, his name's Othniel, he's kind of neutral. It doesn't say anything bad about him. It doesn't necessarily, you know, say he's this amazing hero or anything. So it's kind of starting out neutral, but we see as we read through, as we will together, we see how this constant pattern that I mentioned last week is reappearing throughout the entire book, and we are continually, after Othniel, this first judge, getting worse and worse and worse to complete societal devastation. And what you're going to see, and I'll read a little bit of it this morning, but as we go through this, you're going to see this pattern reemerge over and over again. Sin. People are not following God and His ways. They're not living what I'm defining as that heroic life. Someone who is living courageously in the midst of lots of challenges, faithful to God and His ways, a person with noble character. That's what this word sin is looking like, doing the opposite of those things. And then it's labeled as God's wrath, but God judges in some way, because the problem is these people are supposed to be showing the world who Yahweh, this God, is. This God that brought you out of Egypt, He saved you from slavery, brought you through the desert and provided for you and said, I'm going to give you this promised land. You are going to show the world who I am, the kind of God that I am, the character traits of me, what I'm all about, what this world is all about, what you and the human beings in this world are all about. God said to Abraham, I'm going to use you in Genesis 12, I'm going to use you and your family to show that to the entire planet. And through you, all people groups on this earth are going to be blessed. That's a pretty big deal. So when they are doing the exact opposite of what God calls them to do and walking away from what it looks like to flourish as a human being, God does something to try and return, to try and point them back in the right direction. And in this case, in the book of Judges, He uses foreign oppressors. People who are not Israelites, who God had said, you know, get them out of the land. I'm going to give you the battle. Just trust in me. They didn't do that. And so throughout the book of Judges, basically a 400-ish year period, it is constantly this pattern. Sin, God judges in some way, usually using a foreign oppressor. They cry out to God for mercy, and God delivers them in some way, typically raising up, in this particular story, judges. Now remember, those judges are not people sitting in robes in a courtroom saying you're guilty or you're innocent. That's not what this book of Judges is all about. I've been doing a lot of talking today, so I got some coffee. Oh man, that's good. I could go for hours now. So the judge that God raises up is typically some kind of military leader. Typically some kind of chieftain or chief of a tribe, typically a political leader in that particular tribe. It's not somebody in a robe, it's really somebody who's going to actually be able to deliver them. So when we use the word judge, really think about deliverer. This person God is raising up to deliver them. So I'm going to read chapter 3, verse 7, and just a few of the chapters or verses in that chapter, and introduce us to the first judge. And there's three that we're covering today, but again, it's not really about these three judges. It's more about what's taking place while God's raising them up to deliver Israel. So Othniel, Ehud, and Shamgar are the three deliverers, the three judges. And I'm going to just read a little bit of Othniel's story, which is not long. I'm going to skip Ehud's story because it's kind of graphic and gruesome. And if you want to read it for yourself, you can go ahead and do that. He basically, God delivers Israel by allowing Ehud to assassinate a king. And it kind of tells you the story of how he decides to assassinate the king. And so it's, you know, very graphic. And I said I was going to keep this PG, so I'm not going to read that. And then the last guy, Shamgar, got one verse about him. It says, after Ehud came, that's the previous judge, Shamgar, son of Anath, who struck down 600 Philistines with an ox goad, he too saved Israel. So we don't get a lot about him. So the point this morning is not so much about these judges, but about what's happening within Israel's culture and why that's important for us. So throughout this series, I want to use this analogy to start today, but this is basically what's going to happen throughout the book of Judges. And you'll see that till we get to the end of it. And this is the analogy I'll use before we start. If you've ever gone to the beach or you're getting ready to jump in the pool, wise people test the water before they actually do that. The crazy people just jump in. Doesn't matter what it feels like. So if you're at the beach and you're going in the ocean, most of us start here, and the waves are just kind of crashing on our feet, and it's kind of cold. And then after a while, you kind of take another step, and you get a little bit closer, and now the waves are kind of like shin high, knee high, and you're thinking to yourself, do I really want to jump in? This water is freezing. And in New Jersey, we were in June, and the water temperature was like 50-some degrees. I mean, it was cold. It's like, who wants to go swimming in that? But after a while, you get a little bit warmer. You don't feel it quite as much, and you step in a little bit further. And now you're kind of going like this as the waves crash over you, and you're kind of trying to look tough and not look like it's really cold. And you're wondering, am I really going to do this? And slowly you kind of work your way in to the water to the point where you're like waist deep now, maybe chest high. If you're me, you're chest high pretty soon. And you go for it. You dive in. The water temperature hasn't changed. You know, if you're at the pool, you stick the toe in. Ooh, that's cold. You take the first step on that first step. You take the second step. You take the third step. Eventually, you get in there. The temperature of the water doesn't change as you're doing that. It is not any warmer as you get further in. Now, maybe you'll get a warm spot in the ocean or something. A warm spot in the pool. I would swim away from that warm spot in the pool, but you know what I mean. So nothing has changed, and yet you're swimming in it, you're enjoying it, you're having a great time, but nothing actually is different. That is exactly what's happening in Israel within their culture. They take that first step in, they go in the land, they disobey God by not kicking the people out, and slowly they begin to get adjusted to the other cultures around them. And things that God said, don't do this, you shall have no other gods before me, the Ten Commandments. You know, these ten they're kind of big. They're kind of important. And slowly as they get into this culture, it's like they're walking into the water, and they start kind of feet high, ankle high, shin high. That's where we're at right now in chapter 3. And by the end of the chapter, by the end of the book, they're swimming in it. And it's not pretty. They gradually get used to the culture that they find themselves in, the culture they're swimming in. And that's why God warned them and said, obey me because I care about you and I know what's going to happen if you don't do this. And slowly they just start looking more and more like the culture. That is always the danger and temptation of the church. This was basically the repeated pattern in all of Israel's story. as they walked away from God and found themselves in different cultures and they forgot about God and his ways. And if you keep reading through the Old Testament to the point that somebody finds the law, the Torah, in the temple, and they're like, what is this? This is amazing. They haven't read it in years and years and years, and they read it for the first time. I think this was with the reign of Josiah, and it's like, we have been exposed to how much we are swimming in this culture, and it's not a good thing. We as the church always have to be attentive to that. Culture is, for the most part, neutral in ways until you put people in it, and people and this group of behavior and the way that we think about the world and behave as a people group together creates a culture. So you and I in the church lives within this culture we're swimming in. And what we have to be careful of is that we're not doing the very same thing that they did in Judges. Where we take that first step, it's cold, but you take that second step, it starts getting warmer, and before you know it, we're swimming in it. So we take that first, well, this isn't that big of a sin, is it? That's not that big of a deal. And so we accept that sin, that thing that God says, this leads to destruction, like that's not what it looks like to flourish as a human being. And I kind of laid the groundwork for how you do that. And we say, well, maybe God doesn't really know what he's talking about in that instance. And we begin to do that over and over and over again, and before you know it, we are saying the exact same thing that culture says. And we're telling ourselves a lie about what is true and good and beautiful. But we're swimming in it. We don't even realize it at times. So Judges is doing that. Chapter 3, verse 7 of chapter 3, we hear this pattern begin. The Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. They forgot the Lord their God and served the Baals and Asherahs. They're using the plural of two specific main gods within the Canaanite culture. The god Baal, the god of the storm, and Asherah was a fertility goddess. And they're using plural there, the author is, because basically they just started serving all these other gods. So the very thing God said, you're going to show all of them who the one true God is. They were doing the exact opposite and just started serving their God and their God and their God and their God. And so chapter 3, verse 7 begins the story of the desperate need of a hero to be found in all of Israel. And one cannot be found. So God chooses to raise somebody up. So here's the pattern. The Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. They forgot the Lord their God and they served all the other gods of the land. The anger of the Lord burned against Israel. So God's got to do something about this because they're going to have the wrong image of who this God is. Well, he's just like all the other gods we serve, just one among many. And God says, no, there is only one true God. And you, Israel, are going to show everybody who this God is and what he's all about. So they're serving all the other gods. So God says, I'm going to do something about this. The anger of the Lord burned against Israel so that he sold them into the hands of Cushan, Rish-Ethaim, king of Aram, Naharaim, to whom the Israelites were subject for 8 years. So basically he allows this foreign oppressor to come in and judge Israel. So what does Israel do? They cried out to the Lord. But when they cried out to the Lord, he raised up for them a deliverer. This is the pattern we're going to see all through Judges. This particular deliverer, his name is Othniel, son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother, who saved them. Now, he was talked about a little bit in chapter 1 when they were talking about military leadership and what they did to try and kick people out. So Othniel was known to people, maybe not so much to us, but this is who God raised up to deliver Israel. The Spirit of the Lord came on him so that he became Israel's judge and went to war. He's going to throw off this foreign oppressor. The Lord gave Cushan, Rish-Thaim, king of Aram, into the hands of Othniel, who overpowered him. So the land had peace for 40 years until Othniel, son of Kenaz, died. And that's the pattern that happens. We just witnessed this in very brief form. Each story about some of these judges gets a little bit longer and longer. briefly, the author says this is what it's going to look like. And what we actually see happening is Israel stepping a little bit further into that water and just getting used to the culture. And then when God delivers them, we always hear the language of, so the land had peace, shalom, for 40 years. And this is what they were driving after. This is what they were searching for, this peace that God offers. This only comes in following his ways. And the problem was these judges, here we go again. Again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, and because they did this evil, the Lord gave Eglon, king of Moab, which was a nation around Israel, power over Israel. So the next story is about, again, Israel crying out, God raising up a judge. This guy's name is Ehud. He assassinates this king and is able to have some peace. And then we're going to hear it again. Israel did what was wrong in the eyes of the Lord, and God raised up a judge, and the pattern just continues. And we'll hear this pattern throughout Judges, but be introduced to some more people. That's going to give us some insight of the dangers of getting used to the water or the culture we're swimming in. These, briefly in chapter 3, are three of them. And again, you didn't hear a whole lot of information about them. It was very brief. Othniel was kind of neutral. Ehud was kind of an assassin, basically, and kills this king. And Shamgar gets, you know, one verse of what he did to save Israel. The bigger point that's being made, I think, as we look a little bit deeper into what's going on, is what I've written here on this slide. Israel left their society become immoral, corrupt, and unjust. Rather than doing and living in God's ways and following what God said, if you read the book of Deuteronomy, that's what it's all about. When you go into this land, this is what you should live like. And then Joshua is about getting into that land, and Judges is about them not doing what they were supposed to do. What happened was their culture, they walked into it and started getting used to all the cultures around them. And what we see happening in the book of Judges is a society becoming more immoral, more corrupt, and more unjust. They were not the image of the God they serve. They were not showing the world around them who this God is and what he cares about, but simply they became a reflection of the culture in which they found themselves. And that's dangerous. That's dangerous when people are desperate for the truth. That's dangerous when people are desperate to know what is good, what is right and not wrong, what is good and not evil, what is beautiful and not corrupt. Who's going to show the culture the answer to those questions? God said, you are Israel. The problem was Israel was becoming more and more like the culture around them. And I just want to briefly give you the three things that the culture around them enticed Israel to do and become, and why this is important. God said, I am going to make you into a great nation if you follow me in my ways. And God knew that you would be tempted as you walked and stepped into that water and got a little bit deeper and a little bit deeper. You would start getting used to the cultures around you. And so we're going to push them out of Israel, and I'm going to plant you here, and through you, all these other nations are going to be blessed. But what actually happened was Israel saw the Canaanites. This was one of the main people groups in this land, and they saw their culture was advanced. They had art, and they had literature, architecture, trading, politics. All of archaeology is kind of attesting to this. This was an advanced culture, and Israel was a slave culture. They came out of Egypt as slaves. They're just trying to figure out who they are as a people. That looked pretty good. All these advances that we have, all these things that they're doing, maybe if we follow what they do, we can have that too. All of these other people groups, Canaanites especially, were connected into worshiping gods and goddesses that had something to do with agriculture and fertility. So Baal was the main one, the big one. He was the god of the storm, and he was the one who said either you live or die by giving you rain or not giving you rain. And in an arid culture, and survival was what life was really all about at this point. When it didn't rain, that meant the gods were mad at you and you had to do something to appease this god. And so Israel would start doing that and worshiping these other gods. A lot of that also with the land was connected to, we're in winter now, but in spring we're going to see a rebirth. And this imagery, this idea was connected to sexuality, and they would have temple prostitutes and things like that. And Israel more and more became immoral. And so what God said family looks like, Israel became to reflect the culture they found themselves in, sexually immoral. They saw the wealth of this culture, materialism, and said, we want what they have. If we do what they do, if we follow what their ways are, maybe we can have this kind of prosperity for ourselves. And slowly but surely, as they continued to walk deeper and deeper into the water and swimming in the culture they found themselves, they stopped looking like the people of God and started looking like the people we're going to be introduced to in chapter 21. And it's not pretty. They destroy, basically, this civilization, this society that God was saying is going to be good, not just for you, but the entire planet. So I'm going to show you just a brief 5-minute video of Chloe. This is from Jewel Women's Center. And she's going to just tell her story about having the opportunity to have an abortion or choose life. And she's going to tell that story. But before I do that, here's the point I want to make about us, the church, and about living in a culture that tries to make things that are not good and true and beautiful normal. That we would just embrace this and say, well, you know, technologically, scientifically, medically, we've come a long way. And what's the big deal about getting rid of this tissue that's forming inside of this person? And I have to say person, because you get in trouble if you say woman, like only women can have babies. I'm not making that up. You just read some articles. That's something that's offensive now, to say only women can have babies. So we live in a culture that says that's really confusing and mysterious. And so when you abort those cells, you're not really aborting a human being. And those of us who would be called what we term as pro-life is simply as saying that life begins at conception. Saying that what's inside there, that thing that's growing, is actually a human being. And we're living in a culture that tries to tell us that it's abnormal and offensive to say that it's killing a baby if you abort those cells. But that's exactly what it is. And the church needs to be a champion for people who have no voice. That's what the pro-life movement is all about. Saying that this is wrong to kill this baby. Because we're not confused about what's actually going to happen. We have advanced in a lot of ways with technology, and we can actually see very early what's going on inside of that womb. And no one ever says, you never go to a doctor appointment and you see that image, and the doctor says, well, Mrs. Johnson, looks like you got a unicorn in there. If we just let that come to full term, you're going to have a unicorn. That's ridiculous. We know what's in there. It's not a unicorn, and we don't expect the unicorn to come out of there. We know it's a human being. If we let those cells grow, what's going to happen? And very early, we can see all of that taking place. And we can actually hear heartbeats very early. That heart that's beating, what is that? It's a human being. I mean, obviously, medicine has advanced such that we can discover so much of what was unknown for most of human history of what's actually going on inside of there. And we're being told to convince ourselves that it's not a human and it's okay to get rid of it. Now, one of the things I appreciate about Juul as well is that many people, unfortunately, choose to abort that baby. But something that we as the church offer, that Juul and lots of women's centers offer, is hope and restoration after that. Because there's a lot of brokenness that comes from doing something like that. Because we know instinctively that there is life there. It's growing. And if we let it do that, we're going to have something beautiful and good to celebrate. That God would give us a part in making life. We can never say that this is normal. And it really hurts me to watch people cheer and celebrate when laws about abortion are extended. That not after 12 weeks, it's illegal after 12 weeks. Let's extend that to 15. Let's extend that out to 20. At 20 weeks, there's pretty much no confusion over what's growing there. I don't know why we would want to celebrate the fact that we're ending a life. That if we would just let it go, naturally, a human would be born. And we live in a culture that celebrates. There were laws in New York, this was maybe last year or 2 years ago, people in the streets celebrating that we're extending that. I mean, at least have the decency to say, this is a pretty tough and serious issue. I don't want to be a culture that celebrates that. There were laws that changed in Ireland as well, and they were celebrating this. And there was some pretty gruesome stuff coming out about what they were doing with babies' organs that were aborted. I'm not even getting into the whole IVF scene and embryos in freezers just there. And maybe if they're lucky, they'll get implanted. And maybe we'll just discard 15 or more embryos because somebody didn't want them. We live in a culture right now that is saying, if we can do it, we will do it. And the church, and to me, our job as the church within this culture is to say, you are asking the wrong question. The question is, should we do it? Not can we, but should we? There's a lot of things that we can do that we shouldn't do. If you're a parent, you already know this. There's a lot of things you can do as a kid, but you shouldn't do. Because there's devastation at the end of it. Can I climb up this tree that's really high and jump out of it? Sure, you can, but should you? We are those people that speak into this culture that says, this isn't normal to me. It's still freezing cold. This water is cold. And apparently I need to expose all of you to the fact that it is cold water. That is a life that is there. And the church and Juul Women's Center seek to come around people to say, we're not just championing life, we want to champion life and help you understand what it means to flourish in life. Because that's what God cares about. That's what he's concerned about. And we should never be at a place where we just say, well, you know, isn't that big of a deal? We're not exactly sure what it is. It's hard to tell when they're just kind of those cells. Our culture tries to normalize a lot that God says is wrong. I mean, we've aborted since Roe v. Wade was legal in this land. Abortion was legal. Over 60 million babies. 60 million lives that never had a chance to see what this world was all about. This gift that God has given and his good. Yes, it's broken, but his good world that he is restoring. And imagine what part they would have played, the story they would have written in bringing about that restoration. Now, I'm making it sound like, oh, this is glowing and loving. There's a lot of bad people out there. Yes, there is. But God gives them a chance to experience the life that he intends. And oftentimes puts people in situations and moments for them to turn from that, like he did with Israel, and experience life as he intended people to experience it. We as the church are those champions, and there's no bigger champion than we need for that baby who has no voice. And for us as the church to say life is too precious and important and we aren't to play God, God gives us a role in creating life, we shouldn't be ending it arbitrarily because we can. Now, this story coming from Chloe is simply one of many from Jewel Women's Center, who seeks to do exactly what I've just said, and they seek to do that with a whole lot of grace, compassion, and they try hard to show people the love of Jesus, because that's what turns people away from saying this is normal and okay, and exposing them to what it really is. And then walking alongside them, this starts the journey, it doesn't end the journey, it begins it, and then they get to celebrate life. So I want to play for you Chloe's story, and I want to just have a word of prayer for Jewel Women's Center and lots of women's centers like Jewel that are doing this daily, looking for ways to champion life, to change what we perceive in our culture as normal and say, it is not, it's broken and it's wrong, and all that leads to is devastation within a society. And Jewel is doing that through talking to young women and really ultimately offering them life that's found in Jesus. So Steve, we'll probably need a lot of volume because it's pretty quiet and it should play automatically. Hopefully. Wait for it. Okay, slide Ange. There you go.
My name's Chloe. The day that I found out I was pregnant, it was very overwhelming. I felt like that was our only choice. Well, I guess my only choice at the time, because my boyfriend and I were both very toxic towards each other. We didn't communicate at all. So we just weren't ready at the time for to bring a kid in. So I felt like that was my only option at that time. I had an appointment with my gyno, and she introduced me to Jewel and told me that Jewel would contact me. And then I think they contacted me that same day, and I went in that same day, I think. And I was talking to Allie, and she was pretty much my therapist, and I cried the entire time. I told her exactly what was happening, and we went over options with everything to do. I was leaning more towards getting rid of it at that time because of everything going on. When I first got the call from Jewel, I was still overwhelmed, but the lady that I talked to, Allie, she calmed me down a lot just by her voice. It was really weird. And then I went in and we talked. When I went into Jewel, it's a very homey place, I guess is the word. You feel like you're at home. Everyone's so welcoming when you walk in the door. They sit you down and they get to know you for a little bit. And then they get into the hard part of talking about your feelings and what exactly you're going through and how they could help with everything. After I had the appointment with Jewel, I came back home. And I was looking at the pictures, I showed Zach the pictures. I started to cry. I didn't think I could fall through with the appointment the next day. I was mainly set on it. And he also said that it wasn't the right time. And then my appointment happened at my OB. And I thought I had already said my goodbyes at the time, because that is something that I wanted to do. But then going into my gyno and seeing the baby, really hit home and I didn't want to do it anymore. So then I came back home and Zach and I just talked about everything. And we said that we were going to try our best with everything. So we decided to keep it and we worked on our relationship a lot. I'm not a very spiritual person, honestly, but yeah, it made me feel relaxed, I guess. A lot of the words that you were saying made me, I guess, realize I wasn't alone with a lot of this. Like, if you go into detail with everything, it just made me realize I wasn't alone with a lot of it. They're very heartwarming. They just make you feel really comfortable with anything. You don't feel like you're being judged at all. They have dual school, which if you're new with the whole baby thing, they go through a lot. And I have a younger sister, so I thought I knew it all, especially with my boyfriend having 3 kids. But with those videos, you learn a lot. So I recommend coming there if you need help. that I appreciate having a place to go to and people to lean on. And I really like the fact that when you go in and you sit down, I wasn't being judged with anything I was saying. And I really just felt like we were family in a way. I looked at her as like my big sister, so it was really easy to open up to her with a lot.
That's just one story of many that I'm sure Jewel could tell and could share. And we've been talking about, and I showed up Dietrich Bonhoeffer last week, and this week I have Jewel Women's Center, because what they're doing is heroic in the sense of how we're defining it. They are being very courageous in a culture that is trying to tell them that they're doing something wrong. They are being faithful to the calling that God has given us as the church to speak into this broken world about what is true and good and beautiful. And they are certainly living a life that, as you heard Chloe say, the people working there love Jesus. And they want that to be evident in how they respond and talk to the people that come there. That is what we need. That is why we are making headway. There's the possibility. I don't know if it's going to happen. You can pray this way. There is a court case coming before the Supreme Court regarding abortion and possibly making it so that states have to decide as opposed to the federal government deciding. There is potential for change in this area, and all that that's going to do is help our culture get back to where we need to be as champions of life. Heroes come from a lot of different places, and God can use a lot of different people, and He uses people like Jewel to do that. One of the things that we always do with Jewel this time of year for this particular Sunday is these little baby bottles. There's a whole lot of them out in the lobby. As you leave to the right, you can take one of these home with you, fill it with change, cash, check, whatever, and bring it back to the church. And these go directly over to Jewel Women's Center, which is actually right in Schuylkill Haven. And all of this goes to fund the ministries that they have to support and walk alongside people like Chloe. So you can have a part in this by simply taking one of these bottles and taking it home with you and using it as an illustration for your family. Our girls usually fill one of these, and we talk about what it's for and why it's important. We as the church are the ones God is calling into this world to make sure we don't get used to that water. It is a battle. Every day it is a battle, and Jewel Women's Center is on the front lines. And you can actually get texts to pray. They will text you. I get a text message, and it says, We just had a Jewel, they call them Jewels, come into our office. They're thinking about an abortion. Please pray. I stop what I'm doing, and I just start praying. There's some cards out there that say the text number that you can be a part of it. There's not a lot, but you can contact the church office, and we can make sure you get on that list. We are fighting a battle that's very important for life, because that's what Jesus came to offer. That is what the cross means. That is what the resurrection means, that Jesus offers us life. Life in the here and now, and that life is valuable and precious and worth fighting for. Let's do our part in fighting for life in this culture, in this moment. Let's pray. God, thank you for the ministry of Jewel. God, thank you for the story that we just heard about Chloe and about her choosing life when it would have been a lot easier not to. God, thank you for the women she came in contact with at that ministry and the representation they are really of you. And as Chloe was sharing there, it just reminded me of how the Spirit tells us he'll give us the words that we need to say. And that's what happened. He gave the words Allie needed to share with Chloe, and God, you used that. And so, Lord, I pray for this ministry. I pray you would continue to provide for Jewel. I pray for all the women's centers like Jewel all over the United States of America and really across the world. God, I pray for our culture in this day and age, in this society, God, valuing life from its point of conception to the very end of life, Lord, that we see this as precious and good. Help us, Lord, to be engaged in this battle, and if nothing else, just to take a baby bottle with us and fill it and use that for the people that are on the front lines having these conversations almost on a daily basis. God, help us to be reminded that this fight is worth it. Help us to be faithful in the midst of it. Lord, help us to have stories full of heroes like what was shared today. Those ladies are heroes in my mind, Lord, championing life here in Schuylkill Haven. Help us to be a part of that as well, that Jesus is the victory that we need, him and in him alone, and it's in his name we pray. Amen.